All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're diving into a case really gets to the heart of something I think is so important for law students and, you know, new lawyers to really wrap their heads around.
Yeah, jurisdiction.
Yeah, jurisdiction. It's like you can have the best case in the world, right?
Brilliantly.
The facts are on your side. But if you're in the wrong court,
it's a non-starter.
Totally, a non-starter. And today's case is just a great example of that. It kind of throws a wrench into the works when you've got foreign entities involved and you think things are pretty straightforward.
Right. The lines can get a little blurry.
Exactly. Exactly. So we're looking at HK Hyland International Trade Comb v. Kevin Multiline Polymer Inc., a 2012 case from the Eastern District of New York. And right off the bat, we're not even talking about the actual substance of the lawsuit. You know, who did what to whom. We're tackling this really fundamental question. Did the federal court even have the power to hear this case in the first place?
The threshold question,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. So we've got this Chinese corporation, HK Hyland, suing a New York resident named Chaoming Zhen and his company, is alleging, you know, unpaid invoices, all that. But what you should really be zeroing in on here is this question of diversity jurisdiction. Under what circumstances, especially when you have a foreign company suing someone living in the U.S. whose citizenship isn't crystal clear, can a federal court actually step in and exercise jurisdiction based on diversity of citizenship?
Huge question, and one that this case really helps us understand.
Absolutely. So I guess to kick things off, maybe just for our listeners who are, you know, maybe early in their legal studies, can we just break down, like, the basics of diversity jurisdiction? What is it and why do we care?
Sure. Diversity jurisdiction under 28 U.S.C. section 1332 is essentially a way for federal courts to hear cases that substantively are governed by state law. The catch, the parties involved have to be diverse in terms of their citizenship. It's there to prevent potential bias from a state court against someone from outside that state, right?
Makes sense. Level the playing field a bit.
Exactly. And the big principle here, the one you really have to remember, is complete diversity. That means every single plaintiff in the case has to be a citizen of a different state or nation than every single defendant. No overlap allowed.
So none of the plaintiffs can be from the same state as any of the defendants?
Nope. That would ruin complete diversity.
Got it. Okay. And how does this all play into alienage jurisdiction?
Yeah.
Because that comes up specifically when we're dealing with parties from different countries, like in the Wulin case.
Right. You're totally on the right track. Alienage jurisdiction is basically a specific type of diversity jurisdiction that focuses on disputes between, as you said, parties from different countries, specifically U.S. citizens on one side and citizens or subjects of a foreign state on the other. The part of the law that's relevant here is Section 1332A2, which spells this out. And that's the exact provision HK Hyland was trying to use to get their case into federal court.
Okay, cool. So let's dig into the specifics of the Hyland case. Walk me through who the players are and what they were claiming.
All right, so you've got HK Hyland International Trade Co., a company formed under Chinese law with its main operations based in Hong Kong. They're claiming that Kevin Multiline Polymer Inc. and some other related entities, all linked to this Chaoming Zhen, didn't pay for goods they had ordered. And as you mentioned, they're basing their argument for being in federal court on diversity jurisdiction under 28 U.S.C. Section 1332A2, saying it's a dispute between a foreign corporation, them, and U.S. residents, which would be Zhen and his companies.
Okay, so that seems straightforward enough, right? Foreign companies suing U.S. residents. But you hinted that there's a snag here. What's the catch?
The catch is, and this is super important for any aspiring lawyer out there to understand, just saying someone lives in a state like they're a resident doesn't automatically mean they're a citizen of that state for legal purposes.
Yeah.
And that distinction is critical for diversity jurisdiction. The complaint in the Hyland case identified Chaoming Zhen as living in New York, but it was completely silent on his actual citizenship. Was he a U.S. citizen or was he, say, a Chinese citizen living in New York? They didn't say.
Ah, okay. So residence is not the same as citizenship.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the court in Hyland made that super clear, saying, and I quote, "Allegations of residency alone cannot establish citizenship." It's a point worth repeating. You can live somewhere for a long time, even have a driver's license and pay taxes there, but that doesn't automatically make you a citizen of that state for the purposes of figuring out if a federal court has jurisdiction. U.S. citizenship, generally speaking, comes about in one of two ways. Either you're born here or you go through the process of naturalization and become a citizen that way.
Right, got it. So residence is not citizenship. What about those who are lawful permanent residents, though? I remember there being some changes to the law related to how they're treated when it comes to diversity jurisdiction. How does that factor into all of this?
Yeah, great point. You're right. There was a change to the law in 1988 that directly addressed this. The amendment said that lawful permanent residents are basically treated as citizens of the state where they're domiciled, you know, their permanent residents, specifically for the purposes of figuring out diversity jurisdiction.
Okay, so let me see if I'm following. So if someone's a permanent resident living in, say, New York, for diversity purposes, they'd be considered a citizen of New York.
You got it.
So wouldn't that mean that if Zen was a permanent resident of New York, the federal court would have jurisdiction in the Whelan case?
Well, hold on a sec. That's where things get a little tricky. We have to understand why Congress made that 1988 amendment in the first place. Their goal wasn't actually to expand the reach of diversity jurisdiction, but to limit it in certain situations. They were concerned about federal courts getting bogged down with what they called suits between neighbors, cases where a U.S. citizen was suing a permanent resident alien who lived in the same state.
I see. So the idea was to prevent people from just running to federal court to sue their neighbor who happened to be a permanent resident. Keep those disputes in state court.
Right, exactly.
Okay, so let's bring this back to Whelan. What if, hypothetically, Chao Ming Zhen is a Chinese citizen, even though he's living in New York as a permanent resident? That brings up what you called earlier the alien versus alien scenario. And you said that kills diversity jurisdiction. Can you break that down for me? Like, why would Zhen, being a Chinese citizen, even if he lives in New York, make the difference here?
Remember, complete diversity demands all the plaintiffs to be from different states or countries than all the defendants. If you've got HK Whelan, a Chinese company, suing Chao Ming Zhen, who is also a Chinese citizen, then you have citizens of the same foreign country on both sides of the lawsuit.
I see.
The fact that Zhen might be a permanent resident living in New York doesn't magically change his underlying Chinese citizenship. For diversity jurisdiction, it's the citizenship that matters, not just where you happen to be living.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. And the court was pretty clear on this, right? What was it they said?
Yeah, they said the presence of a foreign citizen opposite a foreign corporation destroys complete diversity. Basically, if the plaintiff and the defendant are both citizens of the same foreign country, diversity jurisdiction goes out the window. Doesn't matter where they live.
Okay, so given this whole uncertainty about Zen's citizenship, how did the court actually handle the Whelan case? Did they just toss it out right away, or what happened?
Well, the court saw that H.K. Whelan's complaint was missing this crucial bit of information about Zhen's citizenship, so they didn't immediately make a decision about the actual debt claims. The court was really focused on its own jurisdiction. It can't just decide any case that comes its way. It has to have the authority to do so.
Right, jurisdiction first.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what do they decide?
Yeah, what happened?
Well, they ultimately held that as the case was presented to them, there was no diversity jurisdiction. They specifically said there's no diversity jurisdiction over suits between a non-resident alien on one side and resident aliens and United States citizens on the other. This basically underscores how vital it is to be super precise when you're laying out the citizenship of everyone involved in a federal lawsuit.
Okay, so it sounds like a pretty harsh outcome for H.K. Whelan. Was that the end of the line for them, or did the court give them any options?
The court recognized that maybe this whole citizenship thing was just an oversight.
Uh-huh.
So they gave H.K. Whelan a chance to fix it. They were allowed to file an amended complaint where they could either provide solid proof that Chao Ming Zhen was, in fact, a U.S. citizen, or they could argue that Zhen wasn't a crucial party to the case and could be dropped from the lawsuit, which might salvage their jurisdiction over the remaining defendants. If they could pull off either of those things, the court might have been able to proceed with the case.
Interesting. So even though they messed up initially, they got a second shot. So I guess zooming out a bit, what's the big takeaway from the Whelan case? What does it tell us about how Congress wants us to think about diversity jurisdiction, especially given like the world's becoming so much more global, you know?
Yeah, I think Whelan is a stark reminder that diversity jurisdiction has boundaries, especially in this age of increasingly international business dealings. Federal courts are courts of limited jurisdiction. They can't just hear any case that walks through the door. And the way the court interpreted the 1988 amendment, and even a later one in 2011, shows that Congress has been moving toward narrowing diversity jurisdiction, not expanding it, to keep the federal court docket manageable. In fact, the court in Whelan quoted the legislative history of the 1988 amendment, saying, "The purpose of the 1988 change was to preclude federal alienage jurisdiction in suits between a citizen of a state and an alien permanently residing in the same state." Highland. And that 2011 amendment further reinforces this idea of limiting federal jurisdiction.
So bottom line for our law student listeners, what's the one thing they absolutely need to burn into their brains from all of this?
You have to be incredibly meticulous when you're stating and proving the citizenship of every single party involved in a case if you're relying on diversity jurisdiction to get into federal court. It's not enough to just throw out a residence. You have to establish, without a doubt, their citizenship.
Because even a tiny error can sink your entire case, right?
Yep. Even something as seemingly minor as writing resident of, instead of explicitly stating citizen of, can derail your whole case before you even get to the heart of the matter.
Yeah. That's a pretty powerful lesson. All right, so before we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave everyone with a final thought to chew on. We talked about how the world's becoming more globalized. So how do you think that trend, with more and more cross-border interactions, is going to continue to affect how federal courts interpret and apply diversity jurisdiction in the years to come? And for our listeners who are going to be practicing law in this environment, what are some steps they can take right now to make sure they don't fall into these jurisdictional traps, especially in cases involving parties from different countries? Something for everyone to think about as they continue their legal journey. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Of course.
See you next time.
See you.